Last Thursday, the International Union for Conservation of Nature, or IUCN, listed the monarch butterfly as an endangered species. It's the morning show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent. And the numbers from the IUCN lay bare the reasons. They estimate between 22 and 72% of migratory monarchs have disappeared in the last decade alone. In the U.S., the population of monarchs east of the Rockies has shrunk by 84%. And they say the population that summers west of the Rockies has shrunk by 99.9%, with a population of 10 million in the 1980s. Down to less than 2,000 today. So what role will we play in protecting the monarch butterfly here in Wisconsin? And is it in danger of going the way of the dodo? What do you think? 1-800-642-1234 to join our conversation. That's 800-642-1234. Emails always available to you anytime. Ideas at WPR.org. Karen Oberhauser is a professor, conservation biologist, and also the director of the UW Arboretum. Karen, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, thanks for having me, Ray. Lee. It's great to be on.
Well, and this is nothing new. We have heard the stories of the challenges of these migratory butterflies for a while now. But why are migrating monarch butterflies facing or listed as endangered by the IUCN last Thursday?
Well, the main reason is that their numbers have gone down so much, as you indicated in your introduction here. But if we look at the reasons for why this is happening, there are two main causes. First of all, habitat loss, and monarchs need habitat throughout their entire migratory cycle of breeding in the northern part of their range and then migrating south to spend the winter along the coast of California or in central Mexico. Then they need habitat while they're in these overwintering sites, and then as they come back north in the spring. So they need habitat over a wide area, and they've lost a lot of habitat over the last couple decades. And the other reason is weather. Monarchs are extremely dependent on the right weather conditions throughout this migratory cycle. And we know that, for example, a single snowstorm in their overwintering sites in Mexico can wipe out 60 to 70% of the population just in a couple days. So they're very vulnerable there when they're all together. But in their breeding range and their migratory range, hot and dry conditions are bad for them, both because they're bad for the butterflies themselves, but also because they're so hard on their host plants. They're milkweed host plants that all of the caterpillars have to eat, and the nectar plants that the adults depend on. So they don't like cold and wet weather, and they don't like hot and dry weather. So they need kind of the happy in between. Some people think of this as the Goldilocks theory of monarchs, that it can't be too hot or too cold or too wet or too dry. So weather and habitat loss are the big drivers, but then there are lots of other things that can harm them as well. For example, increased pesticide use. When we use insecticides to control mosquitoes in our backyards, those are not specific to mosquitoes. Those kill all insects, including the butterflies that we love and the pollinators that our plants depend on. So pesticides are a reason, especially insecticides, collisions with vehicles. Sometimes when butterflies are flying over the road, they might get hit by cars. There are lots of predators and parasites out there. So there are lots of things that can get you if you're a monarch. We estimate that only about 5% of the eggs that are laid by females will make it to become an adult. So lots of things can get them.
Karen Oberhauser, as the director of the UW Arboretum, what role does Wisconsin play in the migratory life of these monarch butterflies?
Wisconsin is really important. We're kind of at the heart of, especially southern Wisconsin, in the Corn Belt, where monarchs used to be very, very common. So sort of the upper Midwestern U.S., Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan. So this is the center of their range. So we're very important. We know from data from several different monitoring programs that there are a lot of monarchs here, and that these monarchs in this central Midwestern United States or upper Midwest form the bulk of the population that goes to Mexico in the wintertime.
the central Mexico, and that is what, like 3,000 miles these butterflies fly?
Well, we don't know exactly how far an individual monarch flies because they're going back and forth a lot along the way. Nobody's ever tracked one all the way. But yeah, it can be up to 3,000 miles from start to finish if you just drew a line on a map. And that journey takes them 2.5 months on average. So it's an incredible journey just to find a place where they can stay alive for the wintertime.
Karen, what's the life cycle of a monarch butterfly? How long do they survive?
Typically? That's a great question. If we think of an individual monarch, and really its life cycle starts when it gets laid as an egg and then when it dies as an adult. So it's usually about a month from the time the egg is laid until the adult emerges. And then the lifespan of the adult varies. So you might think, wow, they migrate to Mexico and that's 2.5 months. That's a long time for a butterfly to live.
Right.
It is. And the butterflies in the summertime, so the butterflies that we're seeing right now, the monarch butterflies, will live approximately a month as an adult. So when they're breeding and going about their life cycle up here, moving around a lot, they only live a month. So that whole lifespan is a couple months. But the monarchs that migrate to Mexico and to California, if they're west of the Rocky Mountains, have a much longer adult lifespan. And those butterflies live from about the middle of August. They start emerging as adults, and they're alive into May. And the reason, so they're alive 8, 9, sometimes up to 10 months.
Yeah.
The reason that they can live so much longer is they're not breeding. So their bodies aren't incurring the cost of reproduction, but also when they're in Mexico, it's cool. It's not freezing. They're not down there in ice and cold like they would be if they were up here, but it's cool enough that their whole body metabolism just slows down and they're sort of in a quiescent state for much of the time that they're in the overwintering sites.
So it's sort of like a kind of light hibernation or just a drowsy sort of laid back cool weather vacation?
Yeah, it's kind of somewhere in between that. It's not a true hibernation because if they warm up, they can come out of that really quickly, but it's a kind of a quiescent resting state for that period. And what's interesting is that there are lots of other butterflies that live in Wisconsin, probably about 160 different species that people could see. And these butterflies all have their own way of surviving the winter. So while monarchs have to fly all the way to Mexico to do that, some butterflies overwinter as an egg, some as a caterpillar, some as a pupa, and some as adults. And there are others that actually move south as well and then come back in the spring. So butterflies and other insects in general just have amazing ways of spending the winter in some kind of a quiescent state that allows them to stay alive until breeding conditions are right again.
Karen Oberhauser, are there other pollinators in Wisconsin that are affected by the type of factors that you mentioned that are impacting our monarch butterflies, like habitat loss and our changes in weather?
Yes, lots of other pollinators, other butterflies. There are many, many bees. In fact, we have an endangered bee, a bee that was officially listed by the Fish and Wildlife Service, the rusty patch bumblebee. Other bumblebees are becoming very rare, lots of moths and other butterflies. So lots and lots of insects are declining in number. And we know that what we do for habitat for monarchs will help all of these other species that we might not be noticing as much. So providing that habitat for monarchs provides habitat for other species as well.
Our guest, Karen Oberhauser, she directs the Arboretum at UW-Madison and is also the founder of the Monarch Larva Monitoring Project. And if you have questions about our pollinators in Wisconsin and what we can do to protect them, 1-800-642-1234. Join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. When we continue, we'll also be joined by the sustainability manager for Alsem Farms and Produce in Friesland. And if you have a question for what they're doing to protect our monarchs, join our conversation. Email available to you as well, ideas@WPR.org. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It was last Thursday, just last Thursday, when the migratory monarch butterfly was added to the International Endangered Species List. I'm Lee Rayburn. This is The Morning Show, and back in December of 2020, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service came to the conclusion that the monarch should be on their endangered species list, but they lacked the resources at the time. Providing the monarch butterfly federal protections was not possible because of, in their words, quote, higher priority listing actions. Well, now that the international community is taking action, what role do we play? Our guest, Karen Oberhauser, is a professor of conservation and conservation biologist, as well as the director of the UW Arboretum. And joining us now is Donald Mom. He is the sustainability manager for Alsem Farms and Produce in Friesland. And Donald, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for the invitation.
Well, I want to just highlight some of the work that's going on at Alsem Farms and what you're doing to protect our pollinators in Wisconsin. Tell us about the work that you have underway.
Right now, we have pollinator prairies that we'll plant. That's the biggest thing is habitat restoration projects that we do. We have probably close to 50 acres already restored into pollinator prairie. And that would be over near our farm near Arena, Wisconsin. And we also have some projects that are tentative for the Adams Friendship area up near Grand Marsh.
And Donald, what would you say makes land an effective pollinator prairie? What works?
Well, it could be anything. Really, it's what's available on your farm. Some of the people participate, like we do, in the Wisconsin Healthy Grown Potatoes program, and where we give back to the environment. And some people have wetlands, so they'll plant these prairies and wetlands in different kinds of areas, such as corners of the farm that aren't being used, or just some land that is set aside or non-farmable land to plant these things. And that's what we do as well.
And we heard from Karen Oberhauser, who talked about what's impacting the declining population of monarch butterflies, as well as other pollinators and habitat loss, weather, pesticides, predators, parasites. But when it comes to pesticides, how does Alsem Farms, Donald, how do you decide or find the balance for the protection of pollinators and the protection of the plants?
Well, pest control is very important, and we participate in things like integrated pest management, where we're not out to kill every bug out there. It's just to keep them at a level where we can still have a crop. And so there are pesticides out there that are very specific. One of the things we try to avoid is these broad spectrum pesticides, and only use the ones that are more targeted for the pests that we're targeting, such as a Colorado potato beetle.
And let's bring. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just saying, by doing so, that tries to eliminate the other pests that the chemicals would kill if you used like a broad spectrum.
And Karen Oberhauser, from your work as a conservation biologist and the director of the UW Arboretum, what do you see as best practices when it comes to balancing the protection of our plants and the protection of our pollinators?
Sure. Well, I think that what Donald is doing using integrated pest management is really important. We have to try to avoid those broad spectrum insecticides, definitely. That's more difficult in some cases in urban settings where the mosquito companies that come and spray yards are using broad spectrum insecticides because they're often targeting different kinds of insects. Trying to avoid, especially on a broad scale in farm fields where those pesticides can sometimes drift out of the fields. So I think anything that can avoid insecticides altogether, or if that's not possible, using something that's much more targeted for the specific insect. And then on a broader scale, managing as much land as possible. So as much land as possible being given back to nature. Like Donald said, in some cases that might be the corners of the field, but we know from analyses of the amount of monarch habitat that would be needed to bring monarchs back to a sustainable level, that the corners of the fields in some cases won't be enough. So Donald mentioned set aside land. That's a really important farm policy, is providing support for farmers to give back some of this land that may not be as productive. So through programs like the Conservation Reserve Program and other set-aside programs where farmers actually can make some money off of their land that would provide a societal benefit, providing more than just food, but providing habitat for other organisms, which in the end will be good for all of us.
We're talking about what can be done to preserve pollinators like the now endangered migratory monarch butterfly with Karen Oberhauser and Donald Maum. Karen's the director of the UW Arboretum. Donald is a sustainability manager for Alsem Farms and Produce in Friesland, which has dedicated now already 50 acres of land to prairie restoration and to serve as a pollinator habitat. What questions do you have for them about your role in all of this? 1-800-642-1234. What you can do, what we can do. Is there a way to protect our pollinators in Wisconsin? We'll start with Chris this morning, who's in Adams. Chris, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. This isn't about Wisconsin, but it's pertinent to what people can do. My sister lives in Florida, and they have an indigenous population of monarchs down there which do not migrate. And so she goes to Fuller Square and buys milkweed plants and puts them out in her yard. And then when the baby caterpillars hatch, she takes them in the house and puts them in a butterfly cage and raises them to adulthood, and then she releases them. And everybody here can do that, too. And that stops the predation of the caterpillars.
Yeah, I know. I understand there are non-migratory monarchs. And Chris, thank you for this. I guess, Karen, I'll ask you, is that a way to protect our pollinators? Is this a system that would work for the migratory monarchs as well?
Well, certainly I don't have any problem with people bringing a few monarchs in. I have six of them sitting on my kitchen counter right now that I'm raising. But I would caution people against bringing every single monarch egg or caterpillar into their house that they can. It's very easy to transmit disease from one caterpillar to the next. Outside, they're living very separate from each other. And in the end, there's quite a lot of research showing that the best thing we can do for monarchs, if we want to preserve them, is to provide habitat for them, that we aren't going to ever rear enough monarchs in our houses by protecting them and then letting them go into a world where there isn't enough habitat available for them.
I got to ask Donald. Donald, are you raising any caterpillars right now?
No, not currently, but I think I saw five or six monarchs in our prairie restorations just yesterday.
Oh, that's very exciting. Let's continue with the questions from you at 1-800-642-1234, where Lori and Shano are standing by. Lori, good morning.
Good morning. One of the places where butterflies go, the monarchs and other butterflies, is along the roadside. And your guest, Karen, said that the butterflies then get hit because they're feeding off of those flowers along the roadside. But the monarchs also, there's milkweed along the roadside. Well, then the state, county, and town guys come through, and it isn't enough that they go through once and take 5 feet from the side and cut that, but they also come through again and mow another 5 feet. There were a couple of patches just south of where I live where they've just totally wiped out those large patches of milkweed. And one year I went just a quarter mile, about a quarter mile, half mile from where I live down on each side of the road. And I picked up, after they had mowed, like over 50 monarchs, the eggs, the caterpillars. And a few weeks ago, I walked, I was just out for a walk, and I even found a chrysalis that had been cut down. I actually released her a couple of days ago.
Oh.
And because they cut so much, they will wipe out all the milkweed in that area so that the caterpillars, even if they do manage to stay alive after the mowing, they can't find any other milkweed around.
Lori, thank you so much for the call, and we are out of time, but that goes to the heart of the habitat loss that we've been talking about. Karen Oberhauser, Donald Malm, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having us.
Karen is the director of the UW Arboretum, and Donald Malm, sustainability manager for Awesome Farms and Produce in Friesland. Ahead this hour, we talk affordable housing with Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley, and he takes your questions as well at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn. Your news is next on the Ideas Network. There are more than 900,000 people living in Milwaukee County. It's the morning show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and for Kate Archer Kent, Milwaukee County is Wisconsin's most populous. The city of Milwaukee itself holds more people than the second most crowded county in Wisconsin, Dane. But what about the more than 350,000 residents of Milwaukee County living outside the city, from Granville down to Oak Creek, from Franklin up to Bayside? And how does one county executive accommodate the priorities of both the city and its suburbs? What questions do you have this morning for Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley? Join us, 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Email available to you, ideas@wpr.org. David Crowley's been Milwaukee County Executive since May of 2020. David, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Lee. It's always a pleasure to be on with you.
Yeah, and Milwaukee County, said earlier, is planning to use about $1,900 of the American Rescue Plan funding, or ARPA funds, to create some affordable housing in Milwaukee suburbs. Tell us about this plan.
Well, this is an exciting plan, and so we're allocating $19 million to this particular program. And what we want to do is put about $15 million to support the development of affordable housing throughout Milwaukee County. And really having a primary focus on suburban affordable housing. And this is not to say that, you know, we won't be focusing on city projects, but the city has their own ARPA funds. And so in order for us to really reverse the trends of segregated communities, and when we think about affordable housing in many of our suburban communities, we don't see them too much. And so we think that this plan is going to be critical to giving many of our residents more options on where they can reside throughout Milwaukee County borders.
Yeah, but affordable housing is not an issue isolated to Milwaukee County. We've heard from several Wisconsin mayors who cite the lack of affordable housing as one of their most pressing issues. So how is the housing shortage affecting Milwaukee and its suburbs? How would you size it up, David?
Well, I think it's a huge issue. You know, as a person who grew up in the city of Milwaukee from the 53206 zip code, I can, you know, speak firsthand what it means to be evicted, to have housing insecurity. And so when we think about right now, the rising in home ownership costs, the rise in rents right now, we know that it is not sustainable for many families who not only live within the city, but throughout Milwaukee County. And so we want to be able to assist in many of these projects to basically help keep rents low. But even if these are market race development opportunities, we want to be able to buy down those rents so they are affordable. And so you have so many families who fall between a gap to where they don't necessarily qualify for affordable housing program. And so they're seeing a fiscal cliff because they're making too much money to give some type of relief. And so we need to make sure that we're doing everything that we can. And we see that people of color, women of color with children are affected disproportionately in Milwaukee when it comes down to evictions and home ownership. And the fact that we haven't seen an increase in African-American home ownership lets you know that we have to do something, you know, to see the type of thriving community that we want to see. And so for us, we see that so many families are struggling right now. And we've seen that struggle in the beginning of the pandemic because we've seen the amount of assistance that folks were looking for or through our eviction prevention program. And so this is a huge issue, and you're absolutely right. This is not just affecting the city of Milwaukee, of Milwaukee County, or the state of Wisconsin. This is affecting us nationwide. And so we know that we're going to need more support than just local government. We're going to need the state. We're going to need the federal government, philanthropic communities, the philanthropic community, and developers to really sit down and have conversations about how we tackle the issue of housing.
We're talking with Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley about the need for affordable housing and his plan to address health disparities and more. Taking your questions at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And David, why are you targeting the suburbs for this housing project?
Great question. So we're really targeting the suburbs throughout Milwaukee County because we don't see as much affordable housing in those particular areas. So we're working with different municipalities to see what we can do. But again, when you think about Milwaukee County, we have a history of being one of the most segregated communities in the country. And so if we really want to try to reverse some of those trends, we have to, again, increase the many options that are available, affordable housing options that are available in our suburban communities. And when you think about the amount of space that many of our suburban communities have and what they're trying to do, because many of their community, many of the people who live in those communities and reside in those communities are suffering as well. And so for us, we know that they don't necessarily have many of the funds to do this on their own. So we want to come in and support our local municipalities. But again, when you think about Milwaukee County, we have to reverse this trend and really eliminate the stigma that we have as it relates to racial segregation and where people reside. And so this is one of the ways that we're going to be able to do that. But again, it's going to take more of us coming to the table. You know, when I think about just representing the county as a whole, as an African-American who grew up in the city of Milwaukee, I want to be able to make sure that our suburban communities are inviting communities for everyone to live in.
The recent Wisconsin Policy Forum report is detailed this morning in Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and the story starts this way. Milwaukee had the worst racial disparity in homeowner rates among nearly a dozen peer cities in 2020, with 26 percentage points separating the combined Black and Hispanic homeowner rate and the white homeownership rate. That from the Wisconsin Policy Forum report and detailed in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel this morning, it seems to go to the heart of what you're talking about, David Crowley. So how do you use these ARPA funds to address that?
Well, you know, when we think about these ARPA funds, I think we have to talk about the fact that these are one-time funding opportunities for us. And so the $15 million to go towards affordable housing developments, the $3 million that we're going to be putting towards Milwaukee County foreclosures to help first-time home buyers buy those homes, you know, these are one-time funds. And so in order to really tackle this issue, we're going to need more assistance. And I think this is where the state legislature and the governor can help step in, as well as the federal government. It's going to take all of us coming to the table to really tackle these issues. And, you know, I can say that, you know, from experience as a person who relocated almost every year for about 15 years of my life, that it's unsustainable. And so we have to do some things differently. And so when I read that Public Policy Forum report this morning in the Journal Sentinel, you know, I think we can all say this is something that we all know about. But now is an opportunity for us to focus on how do we fix how do we change our trajectory? How do we fix this issue that we're in? And we know that a lot of this is really addressing many of the historic policies that kept people of color from living in many of these communities and working with those local municipalities again. But this is going to be an all hands on deck effort. And we need everybody at the table to figure out how we move forward. And more importantly, make sure that housing is affordable. And this really builds upon a lot of the success that we have had throughout Milwaukee County, right? And so we think about in 2015, when we started the Housing First program, we've seen a 92% reduction since then in our unsheltered homeless population. We were able to come up with the right to counsel for individuals who are facing eviction so they can have representation in court, and what we've been able to do with the emergency rental assistance dollars. And so this gives us a great opportunity to build upon many of the great programs that we have, But again, this is not sustainable, and we have to continue to have these conversations to make sure that Milwaukee is going to be in the best place to serve all of the residents who currently live here, but also to attract other folks who are looking for a new scene.
Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley, our guest. And David, are any communities pushing back to the idea of affordable housing being built in their backyard? Is there a NIMBY effect that you have found so far?
As you know, so far, I think when we think about the NIMBY effect, we all can honestly say that it's been here for a while. And we know that it's here, but we haven't seen any pushback at this moment, because I think when we think about affordable housing, the perception of who is living in affordable housing is changing. I think we forget that these are our teachers, these are our EMS workers and firefighters, many of our frontline and essential workers that we rely on an everyday basis. When we think about people with disabilities who need to make sure that they have affordable housing over their heads. And so as of right now, since we have made this particular announcement, we haven't seen too much pushback. But I think we need to continue to have these conversations so people understand why we need to create more housing, affordable housing, in many of our suburban areas, but just across the state in general.
And how do you address developers in this equation? How do you go to them and develop a business model that works for them and the folks who will live in these homes?
Well, I think it's about having open communication at this moment. You know, when you think about how inflation is really hindering many developers' ability to actually continue with many of their projects. It's one of the reasons why we came up with this $15 million program to assist in these projects, making sure that we can keep rents low. And so it's about making sure that we can talk to them, understanding the challenges that they have within their workforce, within their supply chain, to figure out how we move forward. And you know, this is going to be an all hands on deck effort. This has to be a cross sector collaboration if we're truly going to solve the issue of housing. And so this, you know, we're continuing to have great conversations. I have to give a major shout out to Jim Matthey and our housing division and all those individuals there who have been talking with many municipalities, developers, as well as different families who have been affected by homelessness and evictions to figure out what we can do to assist them. But the conversation has to be open and has to be authentic. And at the end of the day, we have to make sure that we're bringing more people to the table who have access to more resources in order to help us all solve this problem together.
Before you were the county executive in Milwaukee, you also served in our state assembly. And when you talk about these ARPA funds being one-time funding that is not going to solve the problems of affordable housing and home ownership disparities in Milwaukee County, it seems to be you might be alluding to the relationship with Milwaukee and our state government. How is that relationship, and what are you doing to better it?
Well, I can tell you that the relationship is definitely getting better. You know, with the recent election with Mayor Johnson, he and I have teamed up. We've had open conversations, meeting regularly with many of the leadership in the state capitol on both sides of the aisle to really talk about what we bring to the table, but what needs we also have when it comes down to making sure that we can improve the quality of living for all of our residents throughout the city and throughout Milwaukee County. I can tell you that there is a lot of PTSD at both the state and the local level when it comes down to really building these solid, honest, and transparent relationships. But as an individual who comes from the state legislature, I am optimistic on what we're going to be able to accomplish in partnership together to make sure that we're improving the lives of everyone, not just in the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County, but throughout this region, because we believe that we're a leader in this region.
Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley joining us, and he's taking your questions at 1-800-642-1234. What do you want to know about where Milwaukee, the county, and the city are going and how they plan to get there? I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. What's it got to be like to go from being a black teenage community organizer in Milwaukee to being elected as the youngest and first African-American executive in Milwaukee County at the ripe old age of 33? It's the Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and our guest is David Crowley, Milwaukee County Executive. And we've heard on this show community organizers calling for political leadership to do more for the people. Well, what happens when those activists become our leaders? Does that view from the top help explain some of those persistent frustrations found at the grassroots level? Join our conversation with Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley at 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. And David, I am curious, what does the 30-some-year-old David Crowley tell to the 18-year-old community organizer? And what perhaps would you take from the 18-year-old community organizer now that you're the leader of Milwaukee County?
Well, you know, that's a great question, Lee. And, you know, what I would tell my 18-year-old self is, you know, continue to do the work that you're doing and continue to focus on the people, but making sure that the people understand the policies that directly affect them. And that's, you know, one of the reasons why I got involved in politics, because I realized that when you start doing a lot of organizing and the community is involved, so you don't understand the policies that are directly impacting them, and you don't have the connections to the policymakers, it's hard to make that change. But if I, you know, my 18-year-old self, I always go back and I reflect a lot about, you know, where I come from, who I am, and what I need to continue to bring forth. And, you know, it's really remembering where I come from, not letting, you know, the thing I would say is not allowing the position to make me, making the position what I think is extremely important. And you have to continue to have bold ideas. You know, not everybody's going to be with you, but I'm excited about the opportunity that we have right now in Milwaukee to make some major changes and really improve the lives of everybody throughout Milwaukee County while creating partnerships in the long run. So I'm excited about this opportunity.
And you took office right there at the about what was it, May of 2020, right? I mean, it was We were just realizing where we were in this whole big pandemic. And just last month, you announced you had contracted COVID. How are you doing today?
I'm doing so well today, you know, and I would tell anyone, you know, it's extremely important that you're vaccinated and boosted. The first few days of having COVID, it really put me under. And I think that I'm fairly healthy. And so it's extremely important that everybody is protecting themselves. And on the onset, you know, coming into office, May of 2020, about 2.5 months in learning about what COVID was and what we were dealing with. You know, it was definitely like drinking water from a water hose, fire hose. When you think about all the different things that we had to do, being the only county in the state and the largest diverse county without a countywide public health department. We had the opportunity to work with many of our local partners to focus on how do we, deploy strategies to focus on informing our community about COVID. But more importantly, when the vaccine came on board, how do we get people this life-saving vaccination? And so, again, you know, when you think about the perfect storm of COVID-19, of CARES and federal, but the opportunity to have folks paying attention because so much was on pause. People only can watch the news and listen to WPR. And so it gave us the opportunity to really tell our story, what we've been able to do. But more importantly, again, bring more people to the table to form partnerships to really do the work that we're set to do.
Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley, also taking your questions at 1-800-642-1234, where Martha and Menominee standing by. Martha, good morning. You're on the air with David Crowley.
Hey, good morning, and good morning to your guest. I'd like to ask Mr. Crowley if, in his planning for this, you know that we know that the inner city can be a food desert, and the outer burbs can be a transportation desert. And I'm wondering if he has looked at options for affordable housing and connecting those areas with transportation hubs, especially with the price of gas. And I'm thinking about, you know, bus lines or ways that people that get into affordable housing in the outer burbs can then address this transportation desert.
Martha, I appreciate the question. The food deserts in the city and the transportation deserts in the suburbs, how do you connect those to make them work for both the city and the suburbs, David?
Well, that's a great question, Martha, and thank you for that. And so I would tell you that since my time being in the legislature, I truly believe that you can't talk about housing without talking about transportation and vice versa. And so we have to make sure that we're doing everything that we can to make sure that our transportation systems, no matter where you live throughout Milwaukee County, are getting people to and from those places. But I would tell you that that's one of the things that is a challenge for us within Milwaukee County. And so when we think about the financial challenges that many local municipalities are facing, our Milwaukee County transit system is definitely facing a challenge. We need to find about $40 million in the next 2 years to make sure that we're keeping up with the current level of service. And so this is one of the reasons why the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County and many partners, including MMAC and the GMC, has been focusing on the Move Forward Milwaukee MKE Coalition. And you can visit moveforwardmke.org to learn more about why we're focusing on a local option sales tax. And what we want to do is be able to buy down the property taxes that individuals are paying into and use that 1% local option sales tax to really focus on many of our local priorities. Now, I talk about 2 years within MCTS, but within 5 years for Milwaukee County, we're going to be facing a fiscal cliff where we won't have any local dollars for any of our local priorities. And so we want to be able to leverage our economic activity. And so when you think about what we've been able to do with the Bucks Run and now with the RNC picking the city of Milwaukee to host their convention, we want to be able to leverage our economic activity, but that's only going to be able to be done by the state giving us the ability to do that. So in order to tackle many of these issues that you're talking about, making sure that we can connect housing to transportation and work with the city of Milwaukee and other local municipalities as it relates to food deserts and having access to fresh produce and vegetables and things of that nature, we need to make sure that we're giving local governments the ability to raise funds. And so that's one of the things that we're doing to make sure that we can tackle many of these issues that you're talking about. And so if we want to make these investments, it's going to take, again, all of us coming to the table, and we really need the state to help us out as it relates to that.
I got another question here, but I really want to get it in. We're running out of time. Sue in Greenfield, quickly with David Crowley.
Hi. I used to take the freeway flyer bus to downtown Milwaukee. I live in Greenfield. And unfortunately, it looks like the freeway flyer bus services are suspended right now, which I think if people are going to be living in the suburbs and more affordable housing, a lot of people really depend on the freeway
flyers. Yeah, Sue, let's ask David because we're running out of time. David, I got about a minute. Are you familiar with the freeway flyer routes and where they stand?
I am absolutely familiar. Yeah, we've had to suspend the freeway flyers. We've had to suspend many of our festival routes as well. And a lot of this is, again, due to not having the ability to fund many of our bus services. But the other thing is that we are also hiring. And so we don't have the same amount of people actually operating our buses that we've had in the past. And so we have a really challenging time when it comes down to hiring. So when you think about the private sector not being able to hire, we have this much similar situations in government as well, because we can't compete with many of the wages that are out there. And so, again, if we want to continue to have the freeway flyers and continue to strengthen our Milwaukee County transit system, which I believe that we are doing when you think about the bus rapid transit that we're going to be finishing up on the east-west leg and what we're looking at on the north-south leg.
David, we're just about out of time here.
But I apologize. But again, it's really about making sure that we have the funds, and we need everybody's help when it comes to that.
David Crowley, thank you so much for joining us this morning. And I'm sorry we ran out of time.
Oh, it's not a problem, Lee. Not a problem.
I appreciate it very much. David Crowley is a Milwaukee County executive. Voters elected him to office 2 years ago. And just ahead, we explore how Wisconsin could improve its accessibility for people with disabilities. Today is the 32nd anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act. So what challenges are you seeing in Wisconsin? That's ahead after your news. I'm Lee Rayburn, and this is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.